Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 347. The title is Axis of Evil, subtitled Carlyle's Way. This program is being recorded on February 11th of the year 2002. Let me, clarify the title of the broadcast. Axis of Evil, of course, refers to the term that George W. Bush used to describe Iraq, Iran, and North Korea, sort of a strange amalgam of nations to term an axis of evil. But the subtitle, Carlyle's Way, is a reference to the Carlyle Group. That is a very, very significant investment firm that we've talked about in the past. It has, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. And among the people who are connected to this particular switchboard are the Bin Laden family and the Bush family, as well as James Baker, Bush's former Secretary of State, and a great many other people as well. And we're going to be talking about the Bin Laden family and Carlyle Group right now. Now, let me encourage you as I read the article from which this broadcast derives its title, let me encourage you to think very carefully about the September 11th events. Undoubtedly, people recall watching the World Trade Center towers collapse, as well as the footage of the Pentagon after it was struck. And as you process the memories of September 11th, do not forget what you're about to hear, and sort of factor in what you're about to hear with your visual and emotional memories of September 11th, and also do not forget the information that you're going to hear presented in this broadcast. The subtitle of the program, Carlyle's Way, comes from an article that appeared in the respected business publication Red Herring. This is from Red Herring's issue of January 8th, 2002. The article is entitled Carlyle's Way, subtitled Making a Mint Inside the Iron Triangle of Defense, Government, and Industry. The article was authored by Dan Briody, B-R-I-O-D-Y, or Briody, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. The article can be accessed on the World Wide Web at www.redherring.com/VC/2002/0111/947.html. Again, the article, Carlyle's Way by Dan Briody, subtitled Making a Mint Inside the Iron Triangle of Defense, Government, and Industry. And again, as you think about September 11th, include what you're about to hear in your visual and emotional memories of that event, and tell your children and their children, and, generally, tell the people that you know not to forget what you're about to hear. This article reads, like everyone else in the United States, the group stood transfixed as the events of September 11th unfolded. Present were former Secretary of Defense Frank Carlucci, former Secretary of State James Baker III, and representatives of the Bin Laden family. This was not some underground presidential bunker or Central Intelligence Agency interrogation room. It was the Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C., the plush setting for the annual investor conference of one of the most powerful, well-connected, and secretive companies in the world, the Carlyle Group. And since September 11th, this little-known company has become unexpectedly important. That the Carlyle Group had its conference on America's darkest day was mere coincidence, but there is nothing accidental about the cast of characters that this private equity powerhouse has assembled in the 14 years since its founding. Among those associated with Carlyle are former U.S. President George Bush Sr., former U.K. Prime Minister John Major, and former President of the Philippines Fidel Ramos. And Carlyle has counted George Soros, Prince Al-Walid bin Talal bin Abdulaziz al-Saud of Saudi Arabia, and Osama bin Laden's estranged family among its high-profile clientele. The group has been able to parlay its political clout into a lucrative buyout practice, in other words, purchasing struggling companies, turning them around, and selling them for huge profits, everything from defense contractors to telecommunications and aerospace companies. It is a kind of ruthless investing made popular by the movie Wall Street, and any industry that relies heavily on government regulation is fair game for Carlyle's brand of access capitalism. Carlyle has established itself as the gatekeeper between private business interests and U.S. defense spending. And as the Carlyle investors watched the World Trade Center's towers go down, the group's prospects went up. And again, note that, as it says here, and I would differ perhaps with the assessment in a very slight way, it says that the Carlyle Group had its conference on America's darkest day was mere coincidence, but there is nothing accidental about the cast of characters that this private equity powerhouse has assembled. And again, yet another sentence from the passage I just read. And as the Carlyle investors watched the World Trade Center towers go down, the group's prospects went up. We're going to return to this article in just a minute, but as one savors, or that's the wrong word, as one contemplates the events of September 11th, just remember that members of the Bin Laden family and James Baker, among others, and as we will see, and as we have seen in past broadcasts, including For the Record Program 329, For the Record Program number 334, For the Record Program number 337, For the Record Program number 342, among others, as well as 346 that we heard last week, the Carlyle Group includes not only members of the Bin Laden family, but also both Georges Bush. Do not forget that. We're going to turn to a point of information that we examined in For the Record Program 334, and we're going to develop it a little more fully based on some information that was carried in the San Jose Mercury News of Sunday, January 27th of the year 2002. This article is actually a discussion of a speech that was given at the Commonwealth Club by journalist Christopher Hitchens. This particular speech is called America, Afghanistan, and the Contrarian. This was a speech that was given by Christopher Hitchens at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco on December 17th, 2001. You can hear this talk in its entirety at www.commonwealthclub.org. Commonwealth Club is one word. Now, in For the Record Program number 334, we took a look at the fact that on September 12th, the day after the attacks, the day after the Carlyle Group Investor Conference was held in Washington, D.C., the day after James Baker and members of the Bin Laden family and other Carlyle investors watched the World Trade Center towers go down, members of the Bin Laden family, as we will see here, specifically 12 members of the Bin Laden family, were flown out of the United States on September 12th in a plane chartered by Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia with clearance from the Central Intelligence Agency. In response to a Q&A, or actually an A, Christopher Hitchens gave this answer. Actually, in response to a Q, he gave this A, so to speak. Mr. Bin Laden's family, some 12, this basically Hitchens is saying if he were president, if I had been president, we wouldn't have had to start from there, and Mr. Bin Laden's family, some 12 members, would not have been flown out of the U.S. on September 12th by a plane chartered by Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia with clearance from the CIA. We're left now with the appalling situation of a national security regime which has for years given millions of dollars to talk loud about national security and terrorism. It seems it knew or could have known about, and had identified many of the perpetrators of the September 11th aggression, but did not do so. Again, note, we have discussed the fact that the day after September 11th occurred, members of the Bin Laden family, and as we see here, 12 members of the Bin Laden family were flown out of the United States. This, Mr. Hitchens alleges, with clearance from the CIA. And I would note that this was before they had a chance to be questioned by the FBI. The Bin Laden family's geographical base in North America is Boston. That is where the two planes that crashed into the World Trade Center took off from. Note that for all intents and purposes, the only civilians in a position to fly in the United States on September 12th were members of the Bin Laden family. Note also the following information. Carlisle's Way by Dan Briody discusses the generally accepted fact and highly disputed by some sources that the Bin Laden family had basically been estranged from Osama. That is at considerable variance with information presented from other sources, including the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, and also the book Dollars for Terror, authored by Richard Labeviere, L-A-B-E-V-I-E-R-E. This is a book we've dealt with before, and I'm going to review a point of information that we discussed in For the Record Program 343. Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States and Islam, again was authored by Richard Labeviere. It was originally published in French in 1999 and was published in softcover by Algora Publishers, A-L-G-O-R-A, in the United States. Their website is www.algora.com. The book's ISBN number is 1-892941-06-6, and the book was translated into English by Martin Demel. Now, bear in mind that the book was originally published in 1999, the English language edition in the year 2000. Prince Turki is the former chief of Saudi intelligence who, as we saw in For the Record program number 337, and this is also a point of information we discussed in 330 and 334, Prince Turki was, that's T-U-R-K-I, Prince Turki was basically the person who ran Osama bin Laden for Saudi intelligence, and their elements of U.S. intelligence closely affiliated with the Saudi. Bear in mind that Prince Turki was replaced as ambassador, basically as chief of Saudi intelligence, the week before the September 11th attacks. And bear in mind also that hours before the annual Saudi-U.S. military maneuvers were to begin in August of 2001, they were canceled by the Saudis without explanation. We took a look at that in For the Record 337. Now, turning to Dollars for Terror by Richard Labeviere, we read of the relationship between Prince Turki, elements of U.S. intelligence, which I think would be a better term to substitute here for CIA, and the bin Laden family, and Osama bin Laden, who was described here as alluded to as banker of the jihad. Turning to Dollars for Terror, we read of the relationship between the bin Ladens, elements of U.S. intelligence, and Prince Turki. Responsible from day one for the Saudi engagement in Afghanistan, quote, from the start, it was he who assumed the role of contact officer for Osama bin Laden, confirms a European military attaché posted in the Gulf for many years. In this sense, Prince Turki always maintained high-level control over the recruitment and the engagement of the Arab Afghans commanded on the ground by Osama bin Laden. This military supervision was carried out through the military business complex of the bin Laden organization. Contrary to its recurring denials, the bin Laden family never cut its ties with Osama, the prodigal son. In spite of his loss of Saudi nationality, which was announced in response to international requirements, Osama always relied on the family group to conclude the training and the many relocations of his, quote, Afghan, unquote, mercenaries. These successive redeployments were always carried out at the instigation of Prince Turki and in connection with his CIA contacts. Among his many activities, the chief of the Saudi Secret Service, endowed with a power that cuts across many fields, politically supervises the allocation of state contracts and always gives preference to the bin Laden group and ensures it the best terms of payment. This meticulous care partly explains the financial power of the banker of the jihad, unquote. And skipping down, still today, Prince Turki, the constrained friend of the CIA and his Secret Service, make abundant use of Osama bin Laden's networks, whereas the Federal Court of New York has issued an international warrant for his arrest. Taking into account the close ties between the United States and Saudi Arabia, it is inconceivable that bin Laden remains beyond reach. Bin Laden's networks, with all their many branches, also enjoy the active support of the Muslim Brothers. That powerful religious fraternity never refused to put its military and financial logistics at the disposal of the Saudi billionaire. The alleged relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood and Al-Taqwa and the events of September 11th is discussed in For the Record 343, and the fascist heritage and, according to some experts, fascist nature of the Muslim Brotherhood is discussed at length in that same broadcast. By the way, I would note that another recent book, this one called Bin Laden, La Vérité Interdite, is a book that was published in French. We dealt with that in For the Record program 337. And the late John O'Neill, in charge of the FBI's investigation into Bin Laden, who resigned in July of 2001, was hired as director of security for the World Trade Center in August of 2001 and was killed in the attacks, charged that American corporations were deliberately obstructing the investigation into Osama bin Laden, and that was because of the Saudi sponsorship of Islamic terrorism and Osama bin Laden in particular, and that because of the oil connections, this was his investigation was being deliberately frustrated. I would note that Mohammed Atta received a parking ticket in New York in June of 2000. In the summer of that same year, John O'Neill had a briefcase stolen from him which had top-secret papers which detailed all of the counterintelligence and counter-terrorist operations in New York City, including the allocations of personnel. I have speculated on air that, in fact, that was in response to the fact that Mohammed Atta's cover, so to speak, had been blown, and in anticipation of not only perhaps the bombing of the USS Cole in October of 2000, but also the September 11th attacks. That obviously is speculative, but speaking of speculation, the Carlyle Group has been engaged in quite a bit of that. Returning to Carlyle's Way, by the way, the title of this article is A Corruption of Carlito's Way. That is a movie starring, I believe it was Al Pacino, and it's about a gangster. Turning to Carlyle's Way by Dan Briody from Red Herring of January 8th of 2002, we read, in running what its own marketing literature spookily calls a, quote, vast interlocking global network of businesses and investment professionals that operates within the so-called iron triangle of industry, government, and the military, the Carlyle Group leaves itself open to any number of conflicts of interest and stunning ironies. For example, it is hard to ignore the fact that Osama bin Laden's family members, who renounced their son 10 years ago, stood to gain financially from the war being waged against him until late October, when public criticism of the relationship forced them to liquidate their holdings in the firm. Or consider that U.S. President George W. Bush is in a position to make budgetary decisions that could pad his father's bank account. But for the Carlyle Group, walking that narrow line is the art of doing business at the murky intersection of Washington politics, national security, and private capital. Mastering it has enabled the group to amass $12 billion in funds under management, and skipping down of the post-September 11th military buildup, and in turn that buildup's resurrection of the Crusader self-propelled howitzer, one of the many military projects that is a baby, so to speak, of the Carlyle Group. Note also that this project takes place in the district of J.C. Watts in Oklahoma, a prominent House Republican. Talking about the troubles Carlyle has experienced in venture capital. Despite its venture capital troubles, however, the Carlyle Group's core business is set for some good times ahead. Though the group has raised eyebrows on Capitol Hill in the past, the firm's close ties with the current administration and its cozy relationship with several prominent Saudi government figures has the watchdogs howling. And it's those same connections that will keep Carlyle in the black for as long as the war against terrorism endures. For the 11th largest defense contractor in the United States, wartime is boom time. No one knows that better than the Carlyle Group, which less than a month after U.S. troops began bombing Afghanistan, filed to take public its crown jewel of defense, United Defense, a company that it has owned for nearly a decade. That this company is even able to go public is testament to the Carlyle Group's pull in Washington. And note that their public stock offering, their IPO, so to speak, was to take basically that filing took place a month after the attacks, less than a month after the attacks. And bear in mind that their investor conference took place in Washington, D.C., and they were watching the World Trade Center towers go down. Do not forget that. Continuing. United Defense makes the controversial Crusader, a 42-ton self-propelled howitzer that moves and operates much like a tank and can lob 10 155-millimeter shells per minute as far as 40 kilometers. The Crusader has been in the sights of Pentagon budget cutters since the Clinton administration, which argued that it was a relic of the Cold War era, too heavy and too slow for today's warfare. Even the Pentagon had recommended that the program be discontinued, but remarkably, the $11 billion contract for the Crusader is still alive, thanks largely to the Carlyle Group. Quote, "This is very much an example of a Cold War-inspired weapon whose time has passed," unquote, notes Steve Grundman, a consultant at Charles River Associates, a defense and aerospace consultancy in Boston. Again quoting, "Its liabilities were uncovered during the Kosovo campaign, when the Army was unable to deploy it in time. It is exceedingly expensive, and it was a wake-up call to the Army that many of its forces are no longer relevant," unquote. But the Carlyle Group was having none of that. While it is impossible to say what U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld was thinking when he made the decision to keep the Crusader program alive, people close to the situation claim to have a pretty good idea. Mr. Carlucci and Mr. Rumsfeld are good friends and former wrestling partners from their undergraduate days at Princeton University. And while Carlyle executives are quick to reject any accusations of them lobbying the current administration, others aren't so sure. Quote, "In this particular effort, I felt that they were like any other lobbying group, apart from the fact that they are not," unquote, said one Washington, D.C. lobbyist with intimate knowledge of the Crusader negotiations, noting the fine line between lobbying and having a drink with an old friend. Skipping down, perhaps even more disconcerting than Carlyle's ties to the Pentagon are its connections with the White House, within the White House itself. Aside from signing up George Bush Sr. shortly after his presidential term ended, Carlyle gave George W. Bush a job on the board of Texas-based airline food caterer Caterair International back in 1991. Since Bush the Younger took office this year, a number of events have raised eyebrows. In the next section, there's discussion of the elder George Bush's involvement in Carlyle investments in Korea. Bear in mind that as we saw in For the Record program number 84 and in For the Record program number 291, the elder George Bush has earned a lot of money since he left the White House doing speeches for the Moon Organization with prominent links not only to South Korea but to Japanese fascism. Again, that discussed in For the Record 84 and 291. I would note that North Korea was singled out as part of the Axis of Evil in the younger George Bush's speech. Returning to this article, shortly after George W. Bush was sworn in as president, he broke off talks with North Korea regarding long-range ballistic missiles, claiming there was no way to ensure North Korea would comply with any guidelines that were developed. The news came as a shock to South Korean officials, who had spent years negotiating with the North, assisted by the Clinton administration. By June, Mr. Bush had reopened negotiations with North Korea, but only at the urging of his own father. According to reports, the former president sent his son a memo persuasively arguing the need to work with the North Korean government. It was the first time the nation had seen the influence of the father on the son in office. But what has been overlooked was Carlyle's business interest in Korea. The senior Bush had spearheaded the group's successful entrance into the South Korean market, paving the way for buyouts of Korea's Coram Bank and Mercury, a telecommunications equipment company. For the business to be successful, stability between North and South Korea is critical. And though there is no direct evidence linking the senior Bush's business dealings in Korea with the change in policy, it is the appearance of impropriety that excites the watchdogs. We are clearly aware that former President Bush has weighed in on policy towards South Korea, and we note that U.S. policy changed after those communications, unquote, says Peter Eisner, managing director at the Center for Public Integrity, a watchdog group in Washington, D.C., which has an active file on the Carlyle Group. Again quoting, "We know that former President Bush receives remuneration for his work with Carlyle, and that he is capable of advising the current president, but how much further it goes, we don't know. Unquote. Skipping down again. While the Center for Public Integrity looks for its smoking gun, others in Washington say hard evidence is unimportant. Quote, whether the decisions made by the former president are a real or apparent conflict of interest doesn't matter, because in the public's eye, they're equally as damaging, unquote, says Larry Noble, executive director and general counsel of the Center for Responsive Politics. Again quoting, Bush Sr. has to seriously consider the propriety of sitting on the board of a group that is impacted by his son's decisions, unquote. And the controversy is expected only to increase as Carlyle's investments in Saudi Arabia are scrutinized during the war on terrorism. Mr. Eisner says that very little is known about Carlyle's involvements in Saudi Arabia, except that the firm has been making close to $50 million a year training the Saudi Arabian National Guard, troops that are sworn to protect the monarchy. Carlyle also advises the Saudi royal family on the Economic Offset Program, a system that is designed to encourage foreign businesses to open shop in Saudi Arabia and uses reinvestment incentives to keep those businesses' proceeds in the country. Note again that Carlyle derives up to $50 million a year from training the Saudi Arabian National Guard. Continuing, but the money flowing out of Saudi Arabia and into the Carlyle Group is of even more interest. Immediately after the September 11th attacks, reports surfaced of Carlyle's involvement with the Saudi Bin Laden Group, the $5 billion construction business run by Osama's half-brother, Bakir. The Bin Laden family invested $2 million in the Carlyle Partners II Fund, which includes in its portfolio United Defense and other defense and aerospace companies. On October 26th, the Carlyle Group severed its relationship with the Bin Laden family in what officials termed a mutual decision. Mr. Bush Sr. and Mr. Major have been to Saudi Arabia on behalf of Carlyle as recently as last year, and according to reports, the Federal Bureau of Investigation is currently looking into the flow of money from the Bin Laden family. Carlyle officials declined to answer any questions regarding their activities in Saudi Arabia. I would note that Bush had actually visited the Bin Laden family compound twice. That's a senior Bush. Skipping down. They are the new breed of private equity, acting more like a large mutual fund of private companies, says David Snow, editor of PrivateEquityCentral.net, a website that tracks private equity firms. The numbers are impressive. Carlyle employs 240 people, as opposed to the 10 or 12 typical of most private equity firms. It has ownership stakes in 164 companies, which collectively employ more than 70,000 people. George Soros invested $100 million in the group's funds. The California Public Employees Retirement System is in for $305 million. Skipping down. But the company's struggles in its venture capital business may be offset at least temporarily by the expected windfall from the war on terrorism. The federal government has already approved a $40 billion supplemental aid package to the current budget, $19 billion of which is headed straight to the Pentagon. Some of the additional government spending is likely to find its way into Carlyle's coffers. The Bush administration isn't afraid to mix business and politics, and no other firm embodies that penchant better than the Carlyle Group. Walking that fine line is what Carlyle does best. We may not see Osama bin Laden's brothers at Carlyle's investor conferences anymore, but business will go on as usual for the biggest old boys network around. As Mr. Snow puts it, quote, Carlyle will always have to defend itself and will never be able to convince certain people that they aren't capable of forging murky backroom deals. George Bush's father does profit when the Carlyle Group profits, but to make the leap that the president would base decisions on that is to say that the president is corrupt, unquote. Certainly would want to make a statement like that. We're going to continue with our analysis in the second half of this program. That concludes side one of For the Record program number 347, Axis of Evil, Carlyle's Way. This has been recorded on February 11th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.